Welcome to the Sales Readiness Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Sales Readiness Group, an industry-leading sales training company that helps companies develop highly effective sales organizations. For more information, visit us at salesreadinessgroup.com. This audio track features our CEO, Norman Bihar, on episode 13 through 16 from our Q&A video series, SRG Insights, where we answer your questions about sales, sales management, and sales training. In this audio track, Norman discusses criteria for sales training success, how to manage conflict within a sales team, how to coach reps to better qualify sales opportunities, and how to effectively motivate a sales team. Enjoy.
George Brontan, founder of Membrane.com, asks, how do you help your sales team qualify or disqualify opportunities?
That is really a great question, and it gets to a real problem that exists in many sales organizations, that salespeople spend too much time on opportunities that aren't currently qualified, and they don't necessarily know what steps to take to qualify those opportunities. So acknowledge that it is a real problem, and certainly disqualifying those opportunities that aren't qualified and aren't going to be qualified anytime soon, and kind of move those out of the pipeline. I also think it gets to one of the most rewarding aspects of being a sales manager, which is coaching. And the type of coaching that we're talking about here is really what I would call opportunity coaching, or is often referred to as deal coaching. And the reason that's rewarding is you're able to work with your salespeople to help them improve their win rates and advance their deals they're working on more rapidly through the sales pipeline. This is also a topic we cover in our new book, The High Impact Sales Manager. As you think about the opportunity coaching, what you want to make sure is that you approach this in a very constructive way. In other words, it shouldn't be an interrogation. I think if it's an interrogation or the salesperson feels that they're going to be in any way intimidated, they're going to stop bringing opportunities to their sales managers. And what a manager really needs to do is think about, what questions do I want to ask to help the salesperson gain the skills to start qualifying their own opportunities? Because you're certainly not going to be there for every single opportunity. And with that, I want to get to some very basics that I covered in a prior episode of SRG Insights. And that's the concept of BANT. And BANT stands for budget, authority, need, and timing. So let's start with the first one, budget. Is there an identified budget associated with this opportunity? Authority, is the person you're working with, do they have the authority to approve this opportunity? Need, is there a truly compelling business need that's been identified within the organization? And timing, how soon are they looking to solve this problem or to address this opportunity? So always keep in mind BANT kind of as the preliminary qualification criteria. But, you know, if it was really that easy and every, you know, deal was either BANT qualified or not BANT qualified, you'd only be working on a fraction of total opportunities. The reality is many deals that you'll want to continue to work on do not necessarily meet all these criteria. So you want to kind of go one step deeper when you think about opportunity coaching, figure out which of the BANT criteria meets, and then here's a series of questions you can ask that really get to the heart of opportunity coaching. And so that first question is, can the salesperson succinctly share with you what the customer's business need is? So ultimately, selling is about either solving a business need in a compelling way or helping a company address an opportunity in a compelling way. And the problem with a lot of opportunities is there may be a very weak need or there may be a very marginal opportunity. But if the opportunity is not compelling, it may be that it's just easier for the customer not to solve it and maintain the status quo. So here's a coaching point. Let's say the salesperson can't share with you exactly what the opportunity is. You might work with them on questions they can ask the customer to really better understand the business need or opportunity. And then based on that, your evaluation of that need or your mutual evaluation of that need, you can decide whether this is an opportunity you want to continue to pursue. The second question you want to ask is, what is the unique value that your sales organization is bringing to that customer? So potentially there's a need that's compelling or an opportunity that's compelling. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're positioned to address that opportunity. So can your salesperson clearly articulate how their solution best addresses the customer's opportunity? If they can't, there's more work to be done. A key coaching point here would be helping your salesperson develop a value proposition that directly in two or three key points addresses the customer's business need or their opportunity. So again, really working on the value proposition so that you're addressing the business need of the customer. A third question you should ask is, who are the decision makers and are you currently working with them? So in other words, does the salesperson know how the decision is going to be made? This really gets back to the bad qualification of authority. So they may be working with an influencer, and that's good. And then are there other influencers, and which of those influencers can help them identify who the decision makers are? So they need to be able to reverse engineer for you either now or in the future exactly what the decision-making process will be. And a key way to do that is to start mapping the organization, particularly on a complex sale, figure out who are the key stakeholders, who are the key influencers, who are the key decision makers, and make sure that you have an access strategy. Because ultimately, salespeople often spend a lot of time and then find out that the key decision makers maybe have another vendor in mind, or maybe have a whole different solution in mind. So again, understanding who's going to make that decision and how you're going to gain access to them is very important. The coaching point I would offer here is really mapping the organization and determining which influencers you can get to who can ultimately get you to those decision makers as early as possible in the sales process. A fourth question is how will the competition try and beat you? So there's an identified business need, you have a value proposition that gets that need, you have access or you have a plan to get access to the decision makers, but you have to think about who are you competing against, because is your solution really the best solution? And I think it's very fair to ask the customer, have your salesperson ask the customer, can you share with me who we're competing against for this opportunity? And they may give you those names, in which case you have some really good competitive intelligence, and they may not. In either case, assuming they do, first, let's kind of go with that case. What you want to do is really, as objectively as possible, outline what are your competitive strengths and weaknesses, and then start putting together some discussion points that really play to your strengths. So you're starting to really highlight the areas that you have a competitive point of differentiation that you can bring to your customer. And I think the coaching point here is really work with the salesperson, particularly if you know who the competition is, on the strengths, maybe also analyze where you've gone up against that competitor before and what kind of some of the win themes were, or if you lost in the past, maybe really understand why you lost and what you could have done differently. In many cases, though, the customer won't share with you who the competition is. In that case, just use your industry knowledge, kind of know who the top tier players are, and still kind of go through the same type of analysis, just assuming that you're going to be competing against the people you compete with most often. And then the last question you should ask is, why will we win? And this is really important. It gets to two key points here. One is, can the salesperson share with you exactly why you're going to win? And they should basically have what their win themes are. And is a salesperson confident when they explain them to you? So you're trying to get to, do we really have really good win themes that are going to allow us to win? And is the salesperson you're working with confident that they can, in the way they're presenting them? Because if they're confident presenting it to you, it's a pretty good bet they're going to be confident when they present them to the customer. Coaching point here, if the win themes aren't strong, you probably need to go back and really look at the four prior questions in terms of the need, the value you bring in terms of how you solve the problem, who the decision makers are, your competitive points of differentiation, and then come back and develop stronger win themes. So the really rewarding part of this, as I mentioned before, is that this is an opportunity to really train your salespeople. So you're coaching them, but you're also training them to kind of go through this analysis on their own. If they understand that you're initially going to look for BANT and then ask these five questions, they're going to start doing that whether you're actually coaching them on a particular deal or not, and you're going to find out they're going to spend much more time on those opportunities that are qualified and maybe disqualify some of those much earlier than they would have normally.
Rainier Simolet, CEO at P4C Consulting, asks, what are the top criteria for sales training success?
So that's a wonderful question. I love that question because when we think about training, we're always looking for success. And I think it gets really to these six key factors that I'm going to share with you that we think about in terms of driving training success. And the first one is executive buy-in. And so when you talk to senior sales leaders, they're looking for business results. That could be increased sales productivity, faster ramp-up time for new hires, better win rates. And I think it's important to acknowledge what they're looking for and then get into a deeper conversation, say, well, if we really want to have those types of business results, what kind of underlying sales skills or behaviors will be required to drive those results? So it could be that if we're into new customer acquisition, really need to focus on prospecting skills. If it's about navigating accounts, we may need to do a better job of planning calls, identifying who the key influencers are, who are the key decision makers, and doing some pre-call research. If it's about really positioning our value, we may have to have better customer conversations. In most cases, we're going to need a combination of all those skills to really drive the results. And I think that kind of conversation helps to create the executive buy-in. A second key factor is really looking for a training partner that's really willing to invest the time to really understand your business. So there's a number of great off-the-shelf training programs in the market today. But when you look for a program that's going to be successful for your company, it's important that you have someone who is willing to take the time to do intake interviews, maybe talk to senior sales leaders, talk to some of your training professionals, talk to sales managers, and of course, talk to salespeople and really get an understanding of your industry, your products and services that you offer, how you interact with clients, what are some of the challenges that you face, who are your primary competitors, what are the most frequent objections. That level of context will create huge relevancy in the delivery of the program. So a third key factor is looking for a training program where the content aligns with the skills. It's really important to do a deeper dive into the curriculum and say, okay, based on the results that we're looking for and the underlying behaviors that need to change, is a curriculum aligned with our goals? Will it result in better sales conversations? Will it allow us to manage the most frequent objections? If we're in a complex sale, will it help us do a better job of navigating accounts, understanding who are the key influencers, who are the key decision makers? So we want to make sure that the curriculum is well aligned with the program. And it's going to be a combination of factors that make for a great program. But ultimately, having the right curriculum is really essential. A fourth key factor is making sure that the training experience is highly interactive. All of us have been in programs that are somewhat lecture-based or very text-heavy. And the problem with those types of programs is not that the underlying content doesn't align with your goals, is that it's not experiential in learning. And what we really want to focus on is the fact that we're dealing with an adult audience. In many cases, in fact, in all these cases, sales professionals who probably have shorter attention spans. And we need to get them actively engaged in the training. So what we like to use as a benchmark is 2/3 of the training experiential learning. That could be group discussion, exercises, role plays, simulations, a variety of frequent interactions where there is skills application and adoption. So what we're really looking for is skills transfer that will drive behavior change. A fifth area is customization and making sure that the program is really customized for your business. And that customization really gets to relevancy. So I mentioned salespeople having shorter attention spans, or they'll make a very quick decision. Is this training going to help me become a better sales professional? In other words, will I be able to close more business or do my job more effectively? Or is it really not that relevant? And they're going to make that decision somewhat based on the look and feel of the materials. But even more importantly, are the examples that are being used relevant to their business? Are the role plays that are being used customized for their business? So in other words, if you're dealing with a services business and you're talking about manufacturing, not relevant. If you're dealing with software as a service, you don't want to be talking about industrial products. So this idea of going in and making the program highly relevant in terms of the discussions, the exercises, and the role plays is really important. And the sixth area, and arguably maybe the most important, is making sure that your frontline managers are committed to reinforcing the training. There's been literally billions of dollars invested in training where there's arguments that can be made that the training didn't stick. And so there's a lot of things you can do in terms of reinforcement to help the training stick. But the most effective way is that you have your managers involved in the training and in ongoing sales coaching, so they're actually on a day-to-day basis coaching the salespeople on the skills that they learned during the training programs. So just to recap, there are 6 key drivers of sales training success. Number 1, your executives have bought into the sales training in terms of both the results and the underlying skills that will drive those results. Your training partner is willing to invest time to learn about your business. The sales training content aligns with your training priorities. 2/3 of the training program is focused on skills application. The sales training content is customized to your business, and your sales managers are committed to providing ongoing sales coaching.
Renan DeBarros asks, how do you deal with office conflicts?
So that is really a wonderful question, because when you think about office conflict, that's typically driven by, either a negative attitude or maybe poor motivation. And most managers over time become proficient at things like managing sales performance. So what are their key results they're looking for? What are the underlying behaviors or sales coaching, which really gets to focusing on the effectiveness of the salesperson's use of selling skills or knowledge. But when you get to attitude or motivation, you actually need an additional skill called performance counseling. And this is one of the topics we cover in our new book, The High Impact Sales Manager. So if you have office conflict, it's likely driven by, again, poor attitude or a lack of motivation. And you want to think about performance counseling as one of the tools you'll use to address that type of situation. So some of the symptoms you'll see when you might need performance counseling is if you're seeing excessive complaining by one of your members of your sales team, or you're seeing a salesperson maybe making negative comments about your company or about you or about another employee, and that would certainly be a driver of conflict. And then think about, okay, this is really going to require a immediate attention and a process to deal with that. But before we get into the process, what I'd like to cover is just some key guidelines you should have in mind. So the first kind of overarching guideline is really think about what is the underlying behavior that you're seeing. And there are certain behaviors where you're absolutely going to want to get human resources working with you early on in the process and consult with them first. Some examples might be a violation of company policy, anything involving substance abuse or sexual harassment. Those are all kind of red flags where you absolutely want to get a human resources professional involved early. But if it's something more like coming late to the office or maybe a negative comment that someone made in the in the break room, those are things you could probably deal with just a little bit of guidelines from human resources. So with that, here are some specific guidelines you should keep in mind whenever it gets to a performance counseling session. Focus counseling on the behaviors. So you really want to focus on the key behaviors that you're seeing. Avoid attacking or labeling the person that you're speaking with in a negative way. Again, you're there to deal with the behavior, not necessarily to in any way attack the person you're working with. You want to focus on plans for improvement. You want to stay away from excuses or blame. You want to make sure that the guidelines that you put in place for improvement are practical. And you want to demonstrate that you care about the success of that individual and your sales team. So here's a 7-step process you should follow when it gets to performance counseling. Step 1, open the session in a positive and serious way. You want to make sure that the person understands that this is important. It can often be awkward. So you may want to point to prior performance where they were doing really well if you can, because what that does is it sets the tone that you know they're capable of having great performance. And then you want to get to the specific behavior at hand. Step 2, after you've opened the session, wait for a response. If you've addressed something that you've seen, maybe it's a person coming late to work, maybe it's a person saying something negative about another employee, after you've brought that to their attention, going back to step 1, you need to wait for their response, and you may want to pause for a while. Initially, they may become defensive, they may deny it. Again, you want to be very specific, tell them exactly what you've seen, and why and how that impacts performance. Step 3, seek and or offer a solution. So the best solution would be one that the employee that you're meeting with can actually offer, saying, so, you know, what do you think you can do to improve the situation? Obviously, if you have their buy-in, you know, a commitment not to start to come on time, or it's a commitment not to, say something negative about another employee, then you've got them invested in the solution. If for any reason you're not pleased with what they're suggesting, then offer your own solution. And at that point, you may want to be very directive. So here's what I'd like to see you do going forward. Step 4, get their commitment to the proposed solution. It's really important that they're committed to the solution. You may have to be very direct and say, based on what we've discussed, you know, is this something you can agree to? If they say yes, you want to take that at face value. You want to be very positive. If for any reason they say no, you don't want to end the discussion on negative bent. You should politely wrap up and say, you know what, I'd like to think about that and I'll get back to you. So again, if they say yes, you're on the right track. If they say no, you want to wrap up that session. At that point, you definitely want to consult with human resources. Step 5, establish a method of follow-up. So once you've had that conversation, you have an agreed to plan, say, you know what, I'd like to get back together just in about 2 or 3 weeks, or depending on what the behavior was, some reasonable period of time, and say, has there really been improvement? If there's been general improvement, you certainly want to note that. You want to share with them why you appreciate that and how that's having a positive impact on morale. If it's not as good as what you've seen, but it's better than it was, probably still want to acknowledge the improvement, but tell them that there's still work to do. Step six, you want to close the session in a positive manner. Whether that's your initial meeting or a follow-up meeting, you want to stay positive. This is someone that you've decided you want to keep on your team, and therefore you want to keep the conversation positive. Again, your goal is to address the underlying behavior, whether that's an employee conflict or some other kind of attitude or motivation issue, and you want to set the tone that you have confidence in that person's ability to improve. Step seven, you want to document the performance counseling conversation. And that will vary from company to company. So whenever you're going to have some kind of performance counseling conversation, it's best to check in with human resources first, find out what kind of documentation, if any, that they would like. And the reason that documentation is really important is it may become very important if you decide you want to maybe reassign that employee to a different role, or you want to put them on a corrective action plan, or potentially even terminate employee. So again, that's likely to be company specific, but again, it's important that you just consult with your HR department. So again, here are the seven steps you should follow as it relates to performance counseling in order to address underlying behaviors driven by poor attitude or motivation. And they are: step one, open the session in a positive and serious way. Step two, after you've opened the session, wait for a response. Step three, seek and or offer a solution. Step four, gain commitment to the proposed solution. Again, if you can't gain commitment to the solution, you probably want to wrap up and come back after you've consulted with HR. Establish a method of follow-up, so set a date and time for your next meeting. Close every session in a positive manner, and document your performance counseling session based on the guidelines from your human resources department. By following these steps, you'll have added a new skill to your sales management arsenal. So in addition to being a great coach and managing performance, you now have some background on performance counseling. And again, all of these topics are covered and more in our new book, The High Impact Sales Manager.
Morgan Pierce, Senior Director of Product Marketing at Altify, asks, how do you motivate your team to win?
You know, that's a great question. And I think when I reflect on the best managers that I've worked with, they're the ones that can motivate and influence their team. But I think there's a misconception out there that to motivate or influence your team, you've got to be this great charismatic leader. And while that certainly doesn't hurt, I think the more important quality, and certainly the much more scalable quality, is managers that really care about their teams and take the time to really understand what's important to each member of their team. So, you know, there's two typical problems that we see. One is the manager falsely assumes that whatever's going to motivate him or her will also motivate their team. And sales teams are pretty diverse, and there's a number of different motivators that may be important to each individual. And as part of that, I think the other problem that we see is that there's this misconception about salespeople that it's all about money. While money is certainly important, there are certainly a number of other considerations. What we typically find is that motivations fall in one of the following six categories: money, opportunity, teamwork, independence, visibility, and excellence. Also, keep in mind that these motivations may change over time. For example, if someone's getting married or buying a new home, money may become more important for a period of time. And also, it's typically there's going to be one or more motivators. So what I'd like to do is just take a little bit of time talking about each of these and what you can do as a manager to support the individual's motive or motivations. So let's start with money. Money, or better said, what money can buy. So if you're trying to support someone who's really motivated by money, you want to be able to relate sales results to financial goals. Or you may even consider adding incentives for higher performance. For example, a higher commission rate for sales above quota. Opportunity. Typically, when someone talks about opportunity, they're thinking about career growth or advancement. So what you want to do to really support that type of motivation is really have some discussion around how success can lead to advancement. You may want to cite how that's occurred for others, or you may want to delegate responsibilities to help someone prepare for career advancement. For example, having them mentor a new salesperson. Teamwork. A lot of people are motivated by being a part of a team. Particularly, that's true with millennials, and you see this whole concept of social networks. So you may want to ask them to lead a team project or provide some team recognition. For example, you may want to set up a team incentive if the team achieves a certain sales goal. Independence. A lot of people choose sales because they want to operate independently. And, you know, often we call this the lone wolf, where you have this feeling of empowerment and freedom. So I think there you support that motivation by providing greater autonomy. But one caution I would add there is you really need to make sure they're accountable. In other words, that autonomy is earned. Visibility. Not surprising, a lot of salespeople are motivated by recognition. So you want to make sure that they know and hear that their contributions or success are appreciated and valued. If appropriate, you may want to share their accomplishments in a group setting or maybe send an email and copy your own boss so they really understand that what they're doing is important. And excellence. There's a lot of people today who simply want to take pride in doing a great job. And I think you want to reinforce that by really complimenting them on the high quality of their work and what it means not only to you, but more importantly to your customers. So as we've discussed, there are a number of different motives that may be important to salespeople. That could be money, that could be teamwork, that could be opportunity, that could be visibility. And so the question that it begs is, well, how do you know? And guess what? It's really not that complicated. All you have to do is kind of observe them on a day-to-day basis and see what they're doing. And then start asking them, you know, well, what do you like most about your job? By taking the time to observe the behaviors and have really genuine conversations, you're going to start to get an understanding of what's important to each person. And then based on that, you can start to develop customized plans where you really think about how you can reinforce and support their motivations.
Thank you for listening. If you found this content helpful, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher, and share this track with your network. Also, our new book, The High Impact Sales Manager, a no-nonsense practical guide to improve your team's sales performance, is now available to order. To learn more and buy a copy, go to highimpactsalesmanager.com. Thanks again for listening, and remember, better skills produce better results.